All right, I mentioned this at the beginning of the show, and great to get this man on. And it has been, I mean, it's cliche to say this, but it's been too long since I've had him in the studio. Award-winning broadcaster, journalist, author, musician, champion of the veterans, soon to be a retired dude after a year or two in the broadcast business, all-around righteous dude and a buddy. Bill Riles joins us from WKRG. Hey, Bill.
Well, thank you, Sean. Pleasure to be here.
Matt, it's good to have you in here. You know, thinking about conversations we've had over time, talked about news stories and things that were going on at WKRG. Also talked about books.
Yeah.
Author.
Yes, we have. Yeah.
You and I have talked about music.
Yep.
You know, I mean, you're a Renaissance man, interested in many things.
I've been called a lot worse.
Yeah, it's not bad. I can't spell it, but I can say it.
Right.
Yeah. A Renaissance man. And the way I add this up from when you started, and Bill's one of us. So what I mean is, when I meet people in TV, and I have people in TV I'm friends with that don't have this on their resume, but when I meet somebody who came from the radio ranks, I go, okay, let's talk.
Yeah.
Right? There's a certain thing, I don't know what it is, but broadcasters that come out of radio and then go and tell, I'm like, okay, I can talk to that person right away.
Well, you know, there are people who go to school for 4 years to try to learn to broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I learned it all on a Saturday morning at WROX AM in Clarksdale, Mississippi. And that just kind of threw you to the wolves. And, you know, that's just where it was. I just learned all about broadcasting and radio. That was my first job. And as you know, way back in the day, you had to have a license.
Oh, yes. That manila paper.
That's it.
Yeah.
Still have it.
Yeah. I don't know where mine is.
Third class broadcast endorsed FCC license. You had to go take a test.
I took it.
Had to be driven to Memphis, Tennessee by a friend of mine to take the test.
Because you were how old?
14. I was 14 years old.
I thought I was young getting in, but I'm not even close.
I was 14, and I had a friend of mine in Oxford, Mississippi, who had taken me. He worked at a radio station part-time, and he took me to the radio station one weekend, and I'm like, this is it.
I like this.
It was an FM station, stacks of albums everywhere, back turntables. I'm like, this is it. This is what I'm going to do. And so I said, how do you do this? You got to go get your license. I'm like, okay. So went to Memphis. Took the test, passed the test. A couple weeks later, my license comes in the mail, and I was ecstatic.
You remember seeing that thing? I remember, like, I got mine while I was a student at the university, and you get it, and you're like, look at this thing here.
Absolutely.
I'm official. Yeah. I can run a VHF radio and a radio
can
station.
Can do it all. Yeah. And immediately after that, had same friend drive me to Clarksdale, Mississippi. It was 30 miles. It's 30 from my hometown, Tunica, Mississippi. It was 30 minutes to Memphis.
Okay.
It's 30 minutes to Clarksdale.
Okay.
So we're right in the middle there.
Equidistant, as
you say. Drove me to Clarksdale, and I walked into WROX, and I said, hey, look at my license.
I got a license. Where's my job?
And they were like, are you free on Saturday and Sunday mornings? I'm like, sure am. Said, you're hired.
You know, that's my worry, too, with this business. Like, you know, we're this kind of weird independent thing, and we have all these live shows every day of the week and do all this. We're really an anomaly anymore. But where you got it, where Dalton got into radio, where I got into radio, Saturday mornings, because the people worked all week, they did not want to work Saturday morning or Sunday morning. And they were looking for somebody. And that was a place you got started. Saturday and Sunday mornings, if somebody got into radio young, that's where you got in.
Exactly. And most of that was not even talking on the radio, like being a disc jockey.
Pressing
most of
buttons.
That was just running the board, pushing in the commercials and the cart machines.
Yes.
Well, there's a prehistoric term.
It makes me, when I can feel I can see the light coming on when you say cart machine, I can see the end of tone light coming on the studio and ready to press play on the next one.
Exactly. And then, of course, Sunday morning, you're running all the Sunday morning church broadcasts, and you got football and all of those things, and you're just punching in commercials. You might do a live station ID at the top of every hour.
Remember that? Did you get nervous before you did that?
I got nervous. You know, when I was really nervous first time I went on the radio, and the first one or two weekends, you know, you had to do your plate voltage and all that, record
take
all that.
Your readings,
your logs.
Yes.
The logs are all written down. And the transmitter went out.
Oh,
and
gosh.
I'm like, so I called up my guy, my mentor, so to speak, and I said, hey, I think the transmitter's off. And he goes, well, did you turn it back on? And I'm like,
I did.
So
not.
He walked me through turning it back on. It was a couple of switches, and boom, we're back on the air. And I was like, okay, thanks.
Now you're an engineer.
I'm an engineer. Right.
So you started that. When did you go from the heart of the Mississippi Delta radio phenom into TV?
Well, it's a short story. I worked at a couple of different radio stations in Clarksdale. I went from Clarksdale to, I believe, where did I go after Clarksdale? Cleveland, Mississippi.
Okay.
Then went to Yazoo City, then back to Greenville, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. And it was in Greenville, Mississippi, where I saw the local, it was a fledgling TV station. It was a CBS affiliate, WXVT. And I saw people on there. And I went, you know,
I'm better.
I could do that, you know. And so I went, this is not how you, by the way, for you folks wanting to get into TV, this is not how you get into TV. But I walked into the TV station one day and asked if I could see the general manager, and he happened to be standing right there. He said, yeah, come on back. He was a good old Southern boy.
Right.
Come on back. And he took me to his office. I said, I'm interested in TV. He said, well, let's get you on a test. And let's see how you do. So he put me on a test. I read some sports, and he hired me right there as his weekend sports anchor.
When you walked in.
Walked in.
You walked out with the job.
Yep. Yep. I told him. I mean,
yeah, again, so disregard what Bill said, because that does not happen.
This
like
is
that
not
anymore.
How it works.
Then y'all went to Doe's Eat Place or something, got something?
Yeah, just, you know, he just hired me right there.
In the station?
In the station.
Not even lunch meeting?
No,
not even.
No lunch, no nothing. Just, you know, that's how it worked.
Wow. But you walked out there and said, well, I'm glad I went in there.
Well, and that story continues. I was sports director, for lack of a better word, for the weekends, because I was the only guy with a camera and the only one there covering sports.
By default, you were the director,
I was,
yes.
By default. So I went around shooting whatever was happening, sports, and I'd do a sports cast in the evening a couple times at night. And finally, I did that for about maybe 6 months, and I got tired of it. And I was working 7 days a week. I was still in radio. And so I told him, I said, I'm gonna quit. And he had just hired a new news director. And he said, the news director was like, well, you'll never work in broadcasting again. If you quit this job now, you'll never work in broadcasting again. 2 weeks after that, the general manager fired the news director, who was also the main anchor of the station, and called me up and said, I just fired the news director. You want to be my main anchor? And I said, is that a full-time job? He's like, it sure is. I said, okay. And jumped into, and that, and again, folks.
I thought you would never work in the business
That's
again.
Not how you get a main anchor job in TV, but that's how it happened to me.
Don't do as he says. But that's crazy.
But it was, I kind of backed into TV in a way and stuck with it ever since. So here we are.
Yeah, and then you come to Mobile. It feels like forever ago.
25 years ago.
Is that what it was?
Yes, 25 years exactly. I was in TV in Greenville for a couple of years. I went to Evansville, Indiana, and stayed there for 15 years. My kids were growing up. Schools were good.
Mm-hmm.
So we stuck around, and it was a good station. And finally got the itch and wanted to come south again, and Mobile was calling, and here we are.
It was pretty, I mean, nothing with the Delta. I'll spend some time in the Mississippi Delta.
Oh,
but,
the Delta's great.
But if you had jump ball, the beaches and Gulf Coast kind
of. Well, and I used to come down here at high school, you know, after I could actually drive and stuff. And we'd road trip down here and go to Biloxi or
Columbia. You didn't get in Gulf trouble Shores. Down here, did you?
No, not a bit.
Y'all believe that? So you do that, you get in TV, and then, you know, one of the things, like, I think the last time you were in, too, we're talking about books.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people say, one day I'm going to write a book.
Yeah.
This is why I'm always impressed with authors, because there's a lot of us say, one day I'm going to write a book, and the day never comes. But there's some of y'all that say, one day I'm going to write a book, and then you do it.
Yeah, yeah. I can tell you why people say that, having written a book or three, because it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to do. And so people may start it and, you know, get into the one or two paragraphs or one or two chapters, and then it just kind of sits there. It just kind of walks away. And it's happened to me. It happens to me all the time.
Yeah, what's neat, though, is, you know, having to write every day for your job, right? Does at least have some mental muscle.
A little bit.
You know, you think it gives you an advantage over somebody who doesn't have to sit down and write every day?
It may, or it may be a detriment just because you're don't want to write.
True, you've been doing it. Yeah,
you've been doing it. Yeah, and so it's fun if you let it be, and if you don't think of it as a job, which a lot of people do. You know, if I'm gonna write this.
Well, I heard you had to do that. You had to get up at a certain time every day and write.
That's what they say, or you just pick when and where you want to write and start writing.
So in pure Bill Riles fashion, you did it the other way.
I just backed into it.
Coming right back with our buddy Bill Riles right here on FM Talk 106.5.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And I'm reading through some of these texts here, Bill. People like Chris said, spend every morning with Bill, drinking my coffee, tell him thank you, bon voyage. Well done, Bill. You got a lot. You do have, somebody says, it's my last chance. It's not your last chance. Maybe I'll even get him back on here, but you're going to be through the end of the year, right?
Still? Yeah, December 19th is my go-to date, and that's only because that's the week I'm going on vacation for Christmas, and then after Christmas, it's my Christmas present to myself, I guess.
Pretty good Christmas present.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it's
been a sweet. What's Tony think about it?
Miss Tony is sort of okay with it.
Okay.
No, she's very supportive, and you know, we had talked about it for a good while, and I let my bosses know this past June that was my intention, because I didn't want to leave them hanging, and I wanted to give them plenty of time to find somebody that could, somebody to replace me. But I think I'll still probably do some things with WKRG, but just not get up in the middle of the night for them.
Yeah, well, there's doing mornings means doing nighttime.
It's tough.
It is very, very tough.
It's a tough job. I mean, it's not, you know, heavy lifting once you get up. I mean, look, if you have a job and you can say that the hardest part of my job is getting up out of bed every morning, that's probably not a bad job,
right?
And in my case, it's a great job, but you know, after 20 years of doing that, it kind of takes a little of the wind out of you. So that's really the real, and that's exactly what I told my bosses that I'm why I made this decision, and I can't.
Yeah, and that's what's all, and what's cool too is knowing you like a dude that there's not going to be lack of something to do. You're not going to be jockeying the Barca Lounger. I know you too well.
No. No, there's.
You're a creative guy. You
do have lots of things going on.
Yeah.
And lately it's been bluegrass music.
Man, I saw you the other day get on a banjo. I mean, playing a guitar is one thing that's impressive, but getting on a banjo? I mean, for somebody who's not musically inclined like me, it looks like that's like from driving a go-kart to driving a Ferrari.
You know, I am not a banjo player. I just picked
it
up about 3 months ago. And
make me sick.
But I've been playing guitar since I was like 8 years old.
Right. And
so I learned.
It translates for the banjo?
Not very well.
Okay.
Some of the finger picking a little bit, but it's all the notes are in a different place. So it's I just got to find. You know, my banjo. I hope my banjo folks will weigh in and, you know, tell me it gets a little easier because.
When does banjo picking get easier?
I practice it more now than I do guitar, but I'm trying to learn it, and so it's been fun. And I equate it. Nobody gets this, but I equate playing the banjo to somebody on a jet ski, because you never see people on a jet ski unhappy. You know, they're
true. Yes.
You know, and,
right.
And you see people playing banjo, and they look serious, but they're really happy. Yeah, because it's fun.
Because real happy because. You're in a state of, oh my gosh, where's my next note?
Or? You're just having fun. You know, it's just so much
more
fun.
Than a guitar.
Well, I mean, I like playing guitar too. It's fun as well. But and I can pick up a guitar and I might sit there with it 15 minutes or 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You never know. It just depends on what's coming up. But so I'm looking forward to kind of collaborating with some people once I get out of this.
Going to be an album coming out? Album?
No, not yet, but who knows? We'll see.
I've
done some
standby.
Recording at home.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'm waiting for that. What about, you got like those three novels. What about some more? We're going to stay with?
I've got a couple in the digital drawer, so to speak. And
staying with same themes? Or
yeah, I like to write crime fiction because over the years I've seen too much funny stuff in real life, crime-wise, that you know, you'd think would be unbelievable, but what they say, you know, truth is stranger than fiction.
Yeah,
and so you can, if you can write it like that, that's fine. You know, based on ripped from today's headlines,
100%. Another thing, you know, I've talked about is your love for our veterans and your service.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, that's a thing that as I watch this, your support, whether it be, gosh, I'm thinking about honor flight days and all that through this. is important to you.
It is. And I just posted today on Facebook one of my reminiscences, as it were, as I go down the trail here, heading out the door. I've been trying to post some of the highlights of my career. One of the biggest, if not the biggest, was the Honor Flight South Alabama. And Dr. Barry Booth, of course.
Being honored, yeah.
Yeah.
What a guy.
I mean, he is such a great guy, and he is such a staunch supporter of veterans. And it was just watching him, listening to him, talking to him, you know, about what the message is about veterans. And so Honor Flight was a big deal. We took almost 1,000 veterans. I said he mm-hmm. and his handpicked staff of veterans took almost 1,000 World War II veterans to see their memorial in Washington. And the thing is, none of those people, a lot of those people would never have made it on their own.
Nope.
You know, due to
physical, time-wise, ability to go.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't want that to be forgotten, what happened there. We talk about our greatest generation. There are people here that stood up and made sure those people got to see that monument.
Exactly, and some of those folks, you know, I'm convinced that some of those folks, knowing that they were going on this honor flight, waited to make that trip and then allowed themselves to pass on mm-hmm. to the next world, you know. So it was just the stories that we got to tell, the stories that we heard that no one had ever heard from these veterans, you know, what they went through. And some of them couldn't tell you what they ate for breakfast that morning, but they could sure tell you what happened on, you know, December 7, 1941 or, mm-hmm. or any other date during that period that they were serving, you know. So it was just to hear those stories and to be able to tell those stories was just a tremendous honor, and I enjoyed it so much.
I mean, it's the matter-of-factness, and the few that I got to be around back then, the matter-of-factness of the story, they'd be talking to you about whatever, and then you ask them, oh, by the way, yes, there I was, and they lay out a scenario that would crush a soul. They're like, yeah, and this day I did such and such, and, you know, my group would, you're like, oh, my gosh, you're just telling me like you're telling me a trip y'all went on last year.
Yeah, it's I had the guy telling me about sticking his head up out of a trench and hearing that distinct German machine gun that they have. I forget what it's called.
MP-34.
Something like that. It's a very distinct sound. And he said, you know, I'd stick my head out of the trench and I'd hear those rounds whizzing by. Had another guy that was on an aircraft carrier, I believe it was the Yorktown. They got torpedo bombed, saw the plane hit the ship, was blown 60 feet away or something like that. And those kind of stories, you know. And a lot of those guys didn't tell those kind of stories to even the people closest to them, you know, their family. Robert Andre, who just passed away just this past year, he was featured in the Morgan Freeman documentary about the black tankers mm-hmm. in World War II. We go out to his place and listen to him tell that story. He had not even told his family that story until maybe 10 years prior to telling us.
Wow.
You know, that's a long time. That was 40, 50, maybe 50, 60, 70 years.
Without telling that story.
Without even talking about, you know, his experiences during the war. And, of course, after that, he's opened up about it, and everybody's telling his story. And it's a tremendous story. You know, he got wounded. They buried him. His comrades buried him in the ground so they'd keep him out of enemy hands. They knew he was wounded. And about 10, 12 hours later, they came back
and got him,
recovered him.
I mean, for us to think about what those men went through. Unbelievable.
It's tremendous.
It is tremendous.
It's just a tremendous effort, and so respect to all of them, yeah.
Respect to you, Bill Rouse. Man, thank you for doing what you've done for all these years, 50 years in broadcast, but it's not over yet.
No, it's not over. I've got a few more days, counting, 45.
Yeah.
Tick, 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 tick.
But 45, and then still, you're not going to disappear. You're not going to be, I know you. You're not going to be sitting
I'll be
at
here.
That.
I'm right
here.
I'll
be sitting in the Bark Lounger.
In Mobile. I'll be bouncing around, hoping to see a lot of people out and about in the evenings.
Yeah,
no he'll be in the evening.
He'll be up late, like 9 o'clock or something like that.
Something like that.
Thank you, Bill.
You betcha.